Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and one way New York can be ready for the next big storm, big data. That's among the recommendations that Governor Cuomo received yesterday from two of his post-Sandy study commissions. Let's talk to the co-chair of one of those commissions called the New York State Ready Commission. He is Erwin Redlener, director of the Columbia University Center for Disaster Preparedness and founder of the Children's Health Fund. He's also the author of Americans at Risk, Why We Are Not Prepared for Mega Disasters. Hi, Dr. Redlener. Happy New Year. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you so much.
The New York State Ready Commission. Remind us of the scope of the report you were asked to write.
Well, we were one of four commissions that the governor established in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, all designed to help the state understand what are the lessons to be learned, how are they going to best be applied, and how do we make, in his words, New York State to be the most disaster-prepared state in the country. And with those kind of very high-minded goals, the particular commission that I co-chaired with Ira Milstein was the Ready Commission. And basically what we were tasked to do was to take a good look at the various issues which would affect the state of readiness. And it turns out to be that is a very complex set of issues and criteria, all dependent one upon another. So we looked across multiple sectors and have been coming up with a series of recommendations, which we started to present to the governor yesterday.
So it looks like you have six main ones, and let's go down some of these. And one of them that does interest me is data. Of course, data played such a role in the reelection of President Obama.
Yeah.
Where does data come in protecting people from a storm?
Well, there's a tremendous need for the sharing of data among various agencies. Having information, it's basically what we're talking about, is having a very robust access to a tremendous amount of information that has to do with the functioning of various systems, so that the response can be very much measured with the measured and specified with the information coming in. In other words, we need to know where things are operating, where they are not operating, where we're sending emergency crews, and where the high priorities are. Are we getting the fuel to the places that are most in need? Where are the areas most devastated, and so forth? And in a major storm like Sandy, it was apparent that it is always apparent in storms and disasters of this size that the quality of the response is really dependent on information that's coming in coordinated and centralized. So there are a lot of different ways that this can be facilitated, and those are among the recommendations that we're providing to the governor.
Well, one of the ones regarding data seemed to be to find all the vulnerable, to have a pre-existing list of where the vulnerable people are, right? So like elderly, homebound individuals,
right,
who we know turned out to be so vulnerable after Sandy, especially if their power went out or they couldn't go out to get food and things like that. So populations always change, however. One year an apartment might have a homebound elderly person living alone who would need help after a blackout. The next year that person may have moved out. So how would the database be kept current or effective?
Well, first of all, it's not an easy task to put together a database. We're dealing with a lot of information that is basically private, is protected by various codes and regulations that, you know, that a lot of people do not want their personal data public. For example, it's not just frail elderly who are homebound that may be vulnerable. It's people with chronic medical conditions and serious medical needs that need their medications and so forth. So we're going to have to be pretty careful in structuring this. It's probably going to start off in terms of people volunteering to be on the list and the government making the case that, look, we're going to keep your information private, but the idea is that we want to keep it current because the idea is that if something happens, we want to be able to get to you, make sure that you are safe. So I think what will be the outcome of this is ways of convincing people that it is in their best interest to keep these lists and to keep them current. Like you said, this is not a static situation. It's extremely dynamic. People's conditions will change, and people and the location of people will change. And I think what we're going to try to do is get as close as possible to a situation where we have information that is vital. Now, is it going to be 100% perfect? I doubt it. Some people won't comply, will not want to be on a list, even if it puts them at further risk. But I do know that for myself and my teams and many of the other people who were in the response effort, it was incredible to find so many people in need that nobody knew about. And this is something that we really have to be working on.
Listeners, we're talking to Dr. Erwin Redlener, who is chairing Governor Cuomo's New York State Ready Commission to help the state be more prepared for future events like Sandy, if you want to call in with a question, or your own recommendation. Maybe they'll still add it on. A readiness recommendation in particular, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Another of your recommendations, generators for more gas stations, because, of course, that was a problem in a lot of places. The power went out at gas stations, and then there were those long lines. And
yeah.
So, of course, with 2020 hindsight, I look at this and say, generators for more gas stations, duh, why didn't we have that before?
Yeah, well, there are so many issues that are exactly like that, where we're looking back on the situation, saying, oh, we certainly should have been thinking about that. But the fact is that being prepared for and responding to a disaster of this magnitude is extraordinarily complex, and everything's interrelated. Because let's say even if we fix the issues of where's the fuel, how will it be pumped, do we have a fuel reserve as a backup in disasters in the future, all of those are perfectly appropriate recommendations. But we also need to have all the other elements. Is the electrical grid stable? Are the essential workers being able to get the fuel that they need to get? Do we have priority systems for who's to get whatever gas is available? But as far as the access to fuel is concerned, there were two main recommendations here, actually. One is to make sure that gas stations that are in certain strategic locations in areas that might be at risk have the ability to back up power generation if, in fact, the grid is having a problem, so that we don't want to face a situation where there's actually gas at the gas stations, but it can't be pumped because electric is down. Where to place those is another challenge, and part of it is in the vulnerable areas, but the other issue is to understand what would be the evacuation routes that people would be taking to get out of harm's way, and to make sure that gas stations actually along the evacuation routes have access to backup power and the strategic fuel reserve.
Interesting. And you also recommended to improve the building code. How?
Right.
Where?
Well, now we're facing some really big challenges because we're talking about, first of all, rebuilding after this terrible storm. And some of the rebuilding may be taking place, obviously, in areas that will still be at risk. And because of climate change issues, no one is sure, and no one can say for certainty that there might or might not be another situation like this occurring in the next few years. So we've recommended that that the state take a very, very good, intense look at housing codes and regulations for rebuilding, because if people are going to rebuild in an area deemed at risk for major coastal storms, then the codes have to reflect that they will be at this area of risk, and the building codes have to be include strategies to make sure that the buildings are as resilient as possible. In other words, we need to anticipate what might happen the next time and build to a level that will protect dwellings, businesses, and other facilities if they're going to be in high-risk areas.
Is one problem with all of these recommendations that every storm is different? Sandy was mostly a tidal surge event that affected people along the shores. Irene was more of a wind event that socked upstate. Those are different storms to prepare for.
There's no question about it. You know, we talk about all hazard preparedness for disasters, meaning that we do things that will encompass the needs that are created by any kind of disaster. The fact is that every storm is exceedingly different. The locations that the storm hits, for example, can cause all kinds of different impacts. We can imagine where other kinds of disasters, you know, whether it's an earthquake or a nuclear plant meltdown or whatever it might be, all of these kinds of issues have very significant and very specific impact. And I think what we try to do is try to create ways of being prepared for as many different events as possible. On the other hand, we also have to think about the costs and the priorities, and it's a very, very complicated but challenge. But there certainly are things, for example, making our electrical system and the grids as resilient as possible would be important no matter what kind of disaster we're talking about. And we're never going to get this 100% right. The question is, how close can we get to optimizing our ability to protect lives and protect vital facilities?
Erwin Redlener, chair of Governor Cuomo's New York State Ready Commission, with recommendations on how to be more prepared for the next Sandy-like event. 212-433-WNYC. And Angela in Bridgewater, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I'm an English professor at a community college, and I developed a green course. It's focused on literature, but the point is how culture cultivates the way we think. And we use examples of Native Americans who felt close to the land. And we go to 19th century and then colonization, a game changer where greed and money became the change agent in a culture, and we ended this year with Wall Street. Ironically, at midterm, I showed the film from NOVA about Antarctica melting, the rising of the sea levels, and that generated so much consciousness raising right after Sandy. And now students are taking the initiative, believing and knowing that they have to do something themselves to encourage activism and protection of the environment. So it is complicated because it's a systemic problem exacerbated by our cultural framework of money.
So when you hear recommendations that are much more concrete, like improve the building codes and put generators at strategic gas stations, are you thinking, yeah, well, that's okay, but it sort of misses the big picture?
I think that's fabulous, because I remember one of your programs talked about the fact that people who are looking at the subways are already preparing for major storms, and that was even before Sandy.
Right.
So I mentioned that in my classes. But none of that had the same impact until stakeholders were affected. And one of my students did a presentation on Long Beach Island. He did a research project. He presented it. He had a house in Long Beach Island, and it was his paper was all about also about the resistance. So that's really why I think all of this is so important.
But
we can't also forget what we can do on the ground as individuals.
Thank you. And I guess, Dr. Redlener, that would be for Governor Cuomo's New York State Prevention Commission if he were to impanel such a thing.
Well, he's got the interestingly, to her point, is he has a commission that's focused on the year 2100, and meaning what do we want to do really long term? And this has to do with really precisely the kinds of things that the caller was talking about, but also what big changes do we need to encompass in order to, say, for example, deal with the overwhelming threat that results from ongoing climate change and global warming with sea level rising and everything else. What is the role of individuals and of government and of the private sector in trying to make sure that we slow down global warming and climate change? Because what this bodes for us is more of the same in terms of large scale and more severe and more frequent storms. And there's going to be a lot that's going to be in the list of to-do list for the long-term prevention and mitigation of large disasters.
Anthony in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anthony. Anthony, are you there? We'll get back to Anthony, who has a good question. If he doesn't ask it, I will. David in the Rockaways, you're on the air. Hi, David. Uh-oh, are we having trouble with our phones? Well, all right, I'm going to ask David's question first, which is about a text messaging system for important communications. And I think that is actually one of the commission's recommendations, right? To use text in particular for more widespread emergency communication?
Yes. So we were suggesting something called New York Text, NY Text, which is described as a location-specific way to communicate. So in other words, we'll know where people are. And for people that are in harm's way, we'll be able to get out emergency messages to a very specific population that is in some particular danger or needs to know some certain information. One of the big complaints of people who survived the storm, Hurricane Sandy, and were left in these communities that had been pretty ravaged, was that it was very difficult to get information about when power was coming back on, what's happening with telephone service, where can we get emergency food and water supplies and so forth. And I think a sophisticated texting system will be one way to deal with that information sharing that's absolutely critical in the aftermath of a disaster.
Let's try Anthony on the island again. Hi, Anthony. Whoops, I think we have you now, Anthony. Hi.
Oh, hi. How's it going?
Got it. Good.
Just a quick question. I wanted to know if your commission is going to address how come none of the electrical wires are never put on the ground after hurricane. That usually is the cause of all the blackouts, and they still haven't put them on for 30 years now that this has been going on.
You mean to bury the power lines? And,
yes.
Yeah, of course. Well, this is a very good point. It's something that we are dealing with in our commission. We need to... There's actually two levels of issue here. One, if the lines are above ground, what is the so-called vegetation management system? In other words, are the power companies keeping up with trimming vegetation that might be close to power lines and then threaten those power lines if there's a high wind situation, for instance? But ultimately, burying those lines is the solution. The problem is it costs a lot of money to do that. It needs to be done. And in an area, you know, at a time where we're having all this fiscal crisis and budget crisis and austerity and, you know, we're watching the rates of the electrical companies for citizens, you know, it's very complicated. And it's on the priority list as far as I'm concerned, though. We should have, by this point in our history, have all the power lines underground and hopefully... that's one of the things that the governor will focus on as well.
And so, as you know, Governors Cuomo and Christie were furious about the delay in Congress voting on Sandy relief bills. The first of those votes will finally come today. But they seem to be splitting up the money once it comes by immediate relief funds versus longer-term rebuilding funds, totaling, we hope, about $60 billion. So even that much money, which sounds like a lot of money to people, would not be enough to bury the power lines in the area where that's not already been done. And all of these things that you're recommending and the governor's related commissions are recommending, they're really going to have to compete with each other, aren't they?
Well, not only are they going to have to compete with each other, they're going to have to compete with other needs that states have at this particular time and going forward. So we're making a lot of recommendations that if we were able to fulfill every one of them would make us way, way more prepared for disasters than we currently are, but the price tag is going to be high. And at the end of the day, we're going to have to make some decisions and establish priorities. And that's not going to be an easy task, I could tell you that, because it's hard to compare the benefit of burying the power lines to a significant hardening of the electrical grid in general and or establishing the kind of fuel reserves that we need. And all of these things are basically going to have to be laid out on a table someplace and people talking about how do we prioritize. And by the way, the people that are going to establish priorities, obviously the governor and his team will be having a central role there, but also citizens are going to need to weigh in and talk about what they believe is most important. And hopefully we'll have a system that we as a community, as a society, will together make those decisions about what should come first and where are the most important things to focus on initially.
Right. Well, we'll see what Governor Cuomo decides. are the most important things from your recommendations and which are going to be included in the State of the State address next week. I know that's why he wanted to report this quickly, so he could pick and choose from among the recommendations to put some things in the State of the State. So we'll see where the governor's priorities fall, I guess, next Wednesday afternoon. And we thank Erwin Redlener, director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at the Columbia University School of Public Health and the founder of the Children's Health Fund and author of Americans at Risk, Why We Are Not Prepared for Mega Disasters. He has been the chairman of Governor Cuomo's post-Sandy New York State Ready Commission. Thank you very much for coming back on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Al Jazeera buys Current TV, Al Gore's liberal cable network. Stay tuned.